If you would, please turn to page 17 on the little guide. Just to anticipate, strangely, the image we're going to see a lot of is this.
Page 17.
Possibly. Now, how do you reckon that's supposed to be like, well, it's supposed to be equal?
Sine wave?
Yeah, sine wave.
Amplitude needs modulation. That should be the same.
Yeah.
Well, you remember mathematics?
Mm-hmm. Little sine, tangent, yes. Angle. Sine. Swings. You know, if you take a, I don't think a pure, I don't think a clock because it gets a little push. But if you took a pendulum, you know, and you swung it, that's a sine wave. It will slowly die down to zero, but if you had no friction, that's swinging. If you plot that, it looks like this. Plot that movement versus time, it looks like this. Can you visualize that?
Versus time.
Yeah, if you took... imagine the swinging, right?
Uh-huh.
If you took the position and assigned it a value at each moment of time,
okay,
and then you plotted it out, it would look like that.
Okay.
If you push, you know, you hit a bump, your car goes like this, mm-hmm. That's a sine wave.
Okay.
If you push a bumper, it'll go like this. If you throw a rock in a, think if you throw a rock in a puddle of water, it'll get a sine wave, right? You know all this stuff, right? Why do you think that's going to be one of the major images?
In quantum physics, there's either the wave or the particle. I mean, when they measure things, and that would show the wave function of matter as opposed to the particle.
This is, I don't think you're wrong, but this is on a slightly different plane. Yeah.
It seems to be always carrying the energy of compensation.
True, but not relevant.
Not it either.
Sorry.
Oh, it sounds like.
For teaching the prime, this might be a little.
Well, he's trying to find the center path for one thing.
True, but not.
Fine wave is swinging back.
Yeah. But you're not missing the point.
Give us a question.
I don't remember.
That's the
why would the sine wave. Now imagine the pendulum, right? See, it has a zero point. And it swings one way. So you can say left. Swings the other way, right? Or you could say it swings to a negative direction, it swings to a positive direction. And it's usually about a zero axis. The swings are always symmetrical.
Would it mean that you have the polarity, but that the one polarity is already always transforming into the other polarity?
Yeah, now what are the two polarities?
Time and transcendent.
Think of number and time. This is the transcendent dimension.
Okay.
This is time and space. So, strangely, in response to his question, what is wrong with science? The answer, in a nutshell, making it way too simple, is a sine wave, which is a swing between the transcendent and the real. Now, what does that have to do with fire? Why would somebody who has trouble with fire have trouble with that?
Make it to the transcendence?
Yeah, fire, emotional intensity obliterates time and space. Your sense of time and space goes all to pieces when you're burning. And the linear sense of time and space goes all to pieces in the irrationality of desire. And in the irrationality of the spirit that is communicated through desire. So here you see, you can draw on what you know about number and time. Those of you who did it. And you can draw on what you know about Sophia. Those of you who did Aurora. All of this is implied in that. The two dimensions, the transcendental and time and space. And the fact that desire is the way that the spirit is communicated, and that destroys your orientation in time and space. And you see, this is both a mathematical symbol and a psychological symbol. So we're going to be seeing these mathematical concepts being both physical statements and metaphors. So you can also see this idea that science is objective is being broken down. Now, I think, as Tom said, here I think we can bring in both what Tom and Nancy said. These are key concepts in quantum physics. Maybe we won't get into that just at the moment. But this mathematical expression is really one of the, at really the heart, I think, of quantum mechanics. So what he thought was merely an abstract designation of the behavior of matter is at the same time a very, very important symbol for him. So that science becomes myth, you could say, or science becomes dream. There is, we will see again and again, when you know how to look, no separation between the work of the scientist and the growth of the scientist, taken at its deepest level.
So that would bring synchronicity.
Yeah, synchronicity would be when this transcendent moves into time. So this is a synchronistic moment. This is a synchronistic moment. And For those of you who, you know, are working on yourself and growing, it's no big deal. But for somebody who's rigid, this is infuriating. Because one of those synchronicities is going to be Marie-Louise von Franz. She will just appear when he needs help working on the problems that he knows he has to work on. So he has to deal with his sexuality for her, because he cares for her on many different levels, and really he can't deal without her, because it will be in dialogue with her that his work can proceed. Because she's probably the only person around outside of Jung who could understand what the heck is going on here at that time. His interests and her interests converged. So, now we're at 1938. Not yet to the point of the war dreams, post-war dreams, but still leading up to them and seeing themes that will repeat in them. And as the author says, oscillation symbols frequently appear in his dreams. That's the third line after a new God image. And then Pauli wrote to Jung in October 1938. See where I am there? After a careful and critical appraisal of many experiences and arguments, I have come to accept the existence of deep spiritual layers that cannot be adequately defined by the conventional concept of time. The logical consequence of this is that the death of the single individual in these layers does not have its usual meaning, for they always go beyond personal life. That would be the loss of ego when time and space is obliterated by emotion and synchronicity. In the absence of appropriate terms of reference, these spiritual spheres are represented as symbols. In my case, they are particularly often represented by wave or oscillation symbols, which still remain to be explained. The relationship to these images is strongly affective and connected with a feeling that could be described as a mixture of fear and awe. There you see the beauty of the guy. He's really trying to wrestle with his stuff. So he realizes that these oscillation symbols are really representations of, for lack of a better word, religious moments. And he reacts to what they stand for with fear and awe. So this rhythm theme is going to be a big one. It's something that Pali is afraid of, but will struggle to come to terms with. Now you can already see the scientific world only acknowledges one dimension of that rhythm. So he is both forced to face in himself that there's another dimension of time and space. And he will be challenged to think, how can science develop so that it can begin to recognize that missing dimension? The recognition of that missing dimension is going to be the challenge to science as he sees it.
Is that, you said that you think there will be a new science, and I thought you said it would be about love and meaning. I thought you said, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think he intuited, remember we're speaking here of a long-term development, mm-hmm. that a new Western paradigm, of which science is a part, is in the process of birthing. And it will begin to see that there is another dimension beyond time and space, and that is crucial to our survival. This other dimension between time and space isn't something just relegated to the churches, but it becomes a focal point of our scientific worldview.
It's interesting that in that, the birth of a new science holds up both our redemption and our annihilation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at a dream of oscillation. Again, this is from 1938, page 18. Still not post-war, but very much anticipating. If you want to, you know there are diagrams in the back. Let's figure that out. Page A. It says page 29 under on the right hand top box. If you had it there.
This one? Okay. Yeah.
I just lifted these out of the German book. That little block should say Fenster. That's window. Fenster. It's window. And UHR or above the circle is a clock. And the writing to the right of the swings, here there's an empty place, empty space. Here is empty space, I guess you could say. you might want to shuttle back and forth because the dream refers. At the top there is a window. To the right of it, a clock. In the dream, I saw an oscillation process beneath the window. Actually, two oscillations, one beneath the other. By turning to the right from the curves, I try to see the time on the clock. But the clock is too high, so that doesn't work. Then the dream continues. The dark, unknown woman appears. She's crying because she wants to write a book but cannot find a publisher for it. In this book, there is apparently a great deal of material on time symbolism. For example, how a period of time is constituted when certain symbols appear in it. At the end of one page of the book, there are the following words. Too many words there. There are the following words. Cross out the next phrase. Read aloud by the voice. The definite hours have to be paid for with the definite life. The indefinite hours have to be paid for with the indefinite life. Now, what he makes of that is that the window signifies the possibility of conscious orientation. So we've got a portrait of how he consciously sees the world. It's kind of the view of consciousness from the point of view of the unconscious. And the window would symbolize his orientation in space, and the clock his orientation in time. But you see, there's one quadrant of the time missing. So what's that tell us?
Part of him is just not home.
To see what? No matter what he says, he just wrote a very eloquent paragraph, but no matter what he says,
he hasn't understood
that there are, that the full nature of time. Again, why is that important? Because if you are visited by the mystery of life breaking in on you, you realize that time isn't linearly describable. And it's odd, don't ask me why, but the dream doesn't say, Polly, you have a problem with love. It says you have a problem with time. That's where it starts at him. Maybe because that's, like playing pickup sticks. That's the first stick to take off. That he has. That's where he can be reached. Begin to reflect on if there are two dimensions to time, then this emotion business must also be taken seriously. That's kind of how I think I'd understand it.
What do you think about the fact that he's got two curves?
Well, that's the next problem. What about those two curves?
Are those that he actually drew out himself, right? Or are they all of his work?
I don't know.
Does it make a difference? Because they're different.
Well, the one on the top almost looks like maybe like a path.
Well, there is supposed to be a difference in frequency. That's in the dream,
yeah.
Or that's in the commentary, isn't it? I think it must have been his. I think because the author interprets him, and I don't think the guy would interpret something that he just himself drew. But I'll ask my friend Dave, who's seen most of these letters, if he remembers. Because these were recorded in, I think, in letters to you. I don't have them, but maybe Dave has them. But I would go on the assumption that it's Pally's.
Can an oscillation have varying peaks? In other words, two different ones, but you can oscillate so far up, but it's always a balance.
Yeah, but here I think it's meant to be two separate waves.
Right, exactly, but I think that nonetheless they're oscillations, but one's a little flatter.
Well, it's kind of like it's distorted. It's not it's not a smooth oscillation.
Mm-hmm. And the other one is pretty regular, huh?
Yeah.
But isn't that down there at the bottom where it's on page 18 where it sort of refers to the spirit of matter?
Yeah. The way he takes it is that the fast wave is Pali's busyness. And the slower wave is this rhythm between time and timeless.
That doesn't have any real precise predictability to it.
Maybe that's the point. It's not quite as predictable.
Mm.
I can't say for certain, but that would certainly be my guess.
I don't know what it means, but it seems like having written out to the side, here is empty space, has something to do with it.
Yeah, well, look what it's under.
The clock.
Clock, right. That's his empty spot. That's how I would take it.
The empty spot on the clock, or the empty spot in him that can be quiet and...
Oh, not a positive emptiness.
Not a positive emptiness.
I don't think so.
I took it as empty space between the two
off judge. Mm-hmm. So that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe it's to mean to the right of the waves.
And I was seeing it referring to that too.
To the right. Yeah.
No, to the
Between the waves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's under the window. Not, it says in here, I draw an oscillation process beneath the window. Does that change what it means then?
Well, the next one says the aspect certainly has something to do with the two curves which he has drawn under the window and the clock.
Which he has drawn. Okay, so there you go.
And in this letter, he then refers to these curves as the mark of the image of God.
Yeah, that's not. Do you understand that one? That's obtuse, but you see why he says that?
Mm-hmm. What was that word again? Did you say the word?
In his letter, Jung refers to these curves as an imago dei. That's the italicized word there, which means the image of God.
Oh, I see.
That's Latin for image of God.
I could see how his reaction to the dream would bring him to that awareness and fear of God.
Yeah, because he says earlier that is what evokes awe and fear in him. So that curve would represent the rhythm by which the transcendent breaks in, which is the big self, and therefore he's called an image of God. You see, Pali wants to see, and we'll be talking about this, I don't know if we'll get to it today, we might. Pali will be talking, would like to see God as a kind of watchmaker who made the universe, set it in motion, and everything runs according to plan. Sort of like the Swiss train system. That's God. That's what Pali would like to see God to be. And what he's being forced to realize is that God is a dynamism that affects daily life.
And it's changing and growing.
And it's changing, it's unpredictable, and it's upsetting.
comes through him because he thought of it. He doesn't look and see the lines already drawn. He actually is the one that creates them. He's the source of the energy.
Yeah, probably the two big ways the self broke in was his despair after the bomb, and then von Franz. He really didn't want either of those. There he was at the top of his profession, had just won the Nobel Prize during the war, and he can't stomach physics anymore. Then he meets this woman 20 years younger than he is, and he's gaga over her. And I think vice versa.
Do you know, did he help von Franz in her work, or was it reciprocal?
I don't think there was any reciprocity. I personally feel that Number in Time was the book he should have written. And she wrote it after his death in honor of his psyche. We'll see that many of the themes that were in that book are going to be in these dreams. For example, one of the key representatives of the point of view Pali should articulate is an Oriental woman. Well, I remember how often von Franz went to the Orient in Number and Time. I think that's probably why. So, no, I don't think he was a guy who gave a lot.
But was she in love with him?
Yeah, I think so. I think they were both in love with each other. Well, I know they were. I can show you why. Want to see why I say that? Mm-hmm. I may have showed this to you before. I don't remember. Her letters to him have been destroyed.
By whom?
I think she.
Oh.
But his letters to her survived.
Oh, you did show
that. I'll show you that. Liebe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's strong in German. Mm-hmm. Love. And then it's signed All Love and Goodness. Yeah, I can barely read this, but I'm...
How did she get her letters back from him?
I don't know, really. I guess at his death, there were, you know, all this has been archived. And is there some law that, there must be some protocol or law around how you handle letters from a correspondent in establishing a public archive?
But they were his letters to her.
Her letters to him.
Okay,
you know.
We're distraught,
but his to her. It is a pity. Yeah, I don't think she was happy about him.
Would his wife have destroyed him?
I don't know, Casey. I'll ask that too.
I guess if I found him, I would have. In a fit of rage and then
yeah.
Regretted it.
Yeah, or not regretted. She was a tough cookie. And she did not like Jung.
Oh.
And this whole Jungian stuff she thought was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on this clockwork business, the author cites Einstein talking about science, and I'll read you. I didn't include it in the text because I hadn't got the reference when I did this, but this is what Einstein says about science. This is at the top of page 19. I believe with Schopenhauer that one of the strongest motives that lead men to art and science is escape from everyday life with its painful crudity and hopeless dreariness, from the fetters of one's own shifting desires. See, that's exactly what Pali was trying to do. And this is what Einstein is saying motivates people for science. A finely tempered nature longs to escape from personal life into the world of objective perception and thought. This desire may be compared with the townsman's irresistible longing to escape from his noisy, cramped surroundings into the silence of high mountains where the eye ranges freely through the still, pure air and fondly traces out the restful contours apparently for eternity. That's what Pali wanted science to be. And you see, he's getting another message from the unconscious. The other image in the dream is the dark woman. Dark, unknown woman who wants to publish a book on time symbolism.
Is that Bonfire?
Well, no, but you're close. I would say you're probably right. But now, can you tie that down to Pali's own life? Yeah, see, it's his sexualized anima that wants this work done on time. Again, it doesn't make logical sense. But we're combining elements that we normally think of as separate. So not only was that desirousness in him something that brought him in touch with von Franz, but that desirousness had at its core the desire to communicate a new worldview. So he would think that he has sexual feelings, but from the dream's point of view, he has a message to communicate, which he is experiencing as sexual feelings.
Comes from that creative sexual part.
Maybe, or maybe it's so hard to grasp, much less articulate, that there isn't a separation between sexuality and the creation of the future. This part of ourselves, which we think is sex, is actually the seed of a new worldview. And at certain points, we're living out sexuality, when in fact, what is behind it is the desire to communicate how life needs to change.
Sometimes in real life, don't we experience some kind of sexual charge when things like that occur, that happen to us? I mean, everything from death to some creative experience,
yeah,
and beauty.
That's a possibility. It's also a possibility that the reverse is true. That's what
you
I'm...
You have the charge first and then that...
No, that there's a part of us that wants to create a new world, and the way it speaks to us is through sex.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I got it. I was trying to say the same thing.
I think they're saying the same thing, but from different angles.
You know, Gary, it strikes me that any time a man and a woman, or I guess it could be a homosexual situation as well, come together, and they're in this creative space, meaning they're both loving the same thing that's coming through them, they can mistake it for being each other, when in fact it's this creative energy that's
exactly
being born through the two of them.
Exactly.
So
yep.
I think a lot of marriages get left, and you know, then the charge ends whenever whatever it is gets born.
Absolutely.
Or whatever, because I just don't think that's a common.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of us have that experience. You're in the presence of somebody who loves what you love, and the two of you in conversation, you can feel this thing coming, you know, this creative energy.
But remember, too, Pali has a sexual problem. I mean, he really has a sexual problem.
Yeah.
Namely, he loves prostitutes. And he's in a, I would say, a largely passionless marriage. They're good pals. And the dream is saying, I think in part, look, behind your sexual issue isn't sexuality. It's a message to communicate. And if you can begin occupying yourself with that message, your feeling about the problematic nature of sexuality is going to change. And again, it's not something one would expect, that by writing an essay on time, you would have less sexual desire. But I think that's what it's saying to him. You would have less of a problematic sexual desire.
Because the filles de joie are always on the clock, so to speak. The prostitutes.
Oh,
I see. And the other takes you out of time and space.
And exactly, the relationship aspect would take you out of time and space.
What was the word you said? The
filles de joie?
Filles de joie.
Filles de joie. Filles de joie. Oh, filles de joie. Oh, filles de joie. I'm being a jerk, sorry.
Yeah. As Nietzsche would say, die Weiber.
You just wanted to say it.
So, is one thing that's working here also is that people who are too grounded in the intellectual life may lose touch with the more feeling, sexual.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
I was thinking about Nietzsche had that kind of problem too, then. At least in his late life, he would say.
I think he was so messed up that he never even got that far. But with Pauli, again, all of what you're saying is true, but I also want to say there is a message in him to be spoken. And it is experienced not as a message to be spoken, but as it is experienced as sexuality. And that's where he's terribly confused. He could see what fate is asking of him, his sexual feelings would change. And to stop chasing women and look toward this message that wants to be expressed as a way of satisfying that longing.
I've never really read any of this, but I do know that in ancient times there was this idea of the sacred prostitute. Does that end into this kind of thing?
No. Well, if anything, von Franz was the sacred prostitute.
No, I mean the idea. I'm not suggesting that. The idea that sexuality was a pathway to some...
Yeah, and I think that was von Franz. Well, but...
Not necessarily that they necessarily had the accurate idea.
I don't even think in antiquity the idea... Well, I don't know. Is it?
Sacred prostitutes in antiquity served the goddesses. You know, they had some secular...
Theirs
was done as a way to propitiate.
There was the other issue, though, the other side of it, was the male issue, that the male was having problems, and that's why he went to the sacred prostitute. It's multifaceted.
Yeah, I think that if you at least take it symbolically, I don't know about the literal setup, but the sacred prostitute, would be living sexuality and its meaning at the same time. So that von Franz's presence in his life was a sexual attraction for a spiritual purpose. Now that's what I would call a sacred prostitute, symbolically speaking. So there I think it's right. But that is still different from the fact that it's the dark anima that wants the book written. That's trying to show him a relationship between his problems with women and his need to be creative in a totally different realm. And at the same time, the way that fate is going to make him deal with this is by putting a real sexual woman in his path. Because he doesn't deal with it inwardly, she appears outwardly. And his experience with her is going to force him to realize what oscillation is really about. Does that make sense? And that, all in the context of a conversation partner capable of helping him bring these books into reality, and that he could do the same for her. So these themes again converge. The message, sexuality, the appearance of just the right person to cooperate with the creative venture, both from his point of view and from her point of view. If you could have combined her psychological knowledge and curiosity about science, his knowledge of science and curiosity about psychology, it could have been one powerful friendship and generative friendship, which I think she was willing to pursue on any level. The next to the last paragraph at the bottom of 19, the another, we're going to see this dark woman a lot, or several times at least. Another figure we're going to see, which is related to her, is what he calls the stranger or the master. He also shows up as a Persian. He also shows up as a blonde man. And what the master and stranger represent, we'll be pursuing at length, but just to anticipate, he will represent that knowledge, that matter and spirit are connected.
Does that include the person in the one dream who's at the door of the house?
Yeah, right. He'll come back in many different figures. And they're often kind of a team. This dark unknown woman and the master. We don't see him yet, but we will. What's the connection between the two of them? How is it that they are a team?
Between who?
Between the dark unknown woman and the master or stranger? Yeah, but how are they linked? Why are they linked?
To show his relationship with his sexual problem and his...
Yeah, exactly. Right. That these are hooked together.
Are they like logos and eros?
Yeah, you could say that his eros and his logos are going to work together. Much to his consternation. Right. That, again, you don't... They are portraits of the two sides, which I mentioned earlier, that his personal life and his creative work are meant to form a unity. The objective world of scientific evolution, the evolution of scientific thought, and the personal development of his own eros and eroticism are combined. And that one is symbolized by the dark anima, the other is symbolized by the master or stranger, but they each contain the other. And we talked earlier, I think, that the mythological background of that master or stranger is Mercurius. We talked about that, I think, didn't we? Yeah. The on the page 20, the third paragraph, starting with an alchemy. In dreams that we don't have, but Pali refers to, this figure was applying for admission to the Ateha. So I think that's one of the key images for us to meditate on. There we see that within the psyche, the scientific worldview is trying to evolve by the addition of another point of view. The Iteha would represent science, and the master or the stranger would represent that wider point of view, which from the point of view of the unconscious wants to come into science. Does that make sense? Well, not to everybody. Okay. Well, let me think. If you've done analytic work, you know the experience that a new attitude often shows up in a dream as an image you don't fully understand. And you live with that, and you work with that, and it communicates to you its point of view. And as you hear that, you begin to change, and then you have integrated what that dream image stood for. But before you can do that, you often live in a period of confusion because you don't understand what it's saying. And often, events have to transpire before you can even understand it, so that the thing is way ahead of its time. And I think the same is true for science. The Iteha would represent, remember that's the technical university where he teaches, the Iteha would represent the contemporary worldview of science. And for within the psyche, we have a portrait that something wants to be added to that. So the psyche is showing us that it wants that point of view enlarged by including this other point of view. This other point of view being a knowledge that there are two dimensions to time, that there is a transcendental dimension and there is a reality dimension. That there isn't a split between spirit and matter. That there is a wider set of phenomena that science can't deal with. And it wants to come in and be added to science. Any better or worse? So this is an image probably hundreds of years in advance of any possibility of realizing it. But just like you don't give up trying to understand something because it's obtuse, that the challenge being put to Pali was to keep this question open and begin to express that question to the scientific worldview. Look, our science is inadequate. Our science needs to have other elements included in it. We may not be the generation to do that, but it's time for the creative edge of scientists to begin putting this question. Just like Einstein put questions about time, just like Bohr began to put questions about causality, Pali was to begin putting the question about those parts of human experience that science can't reconcile. And I think all of that is in that little image of the stranger trying to apply to the institute where Pal is to learn and contribute. And this dream figure is going to be very critical of Pali, who was considered the final authority in his day on matters of methodology. And before they would spend money on the big experiment, they'd ask him around the world. If a experiment was conducted and the results were being interpreted, they would ask him. He was called the whip of God, the Geisel Gottes. There in that quote paragraph. The whip or scourge? Scourge. Geisel Gottes, or der fürchtige Pali, the dreadful or terrible Pali, because he was highly critical of what was being done. And yet in his dreams he becomes the object of criticism.
Ordinary life, were there things that were occurring to him that he should be doing or should be experimenting with or should be considering that he was refusing to look at?
Yes. As we'll see, just see, we're going over time here. Let me make it quick. What he was to have written that book on time symbolism. Literally or as a metaphor, I'm not sure. But he was to begin expressing those points of view in his unconscious about the limitations of science and the possible directions of the growth of science, but he never did. So yes, there's a very specific task here. And we're going to see the dreams keep bringing him back again and again and again to that work, which would be starting now with the worldview of science. Where's it going to go? And as a researcher in science, he would have known what it was like to look at a worldview at one moment in history, which was Newtonian, and bring it into the quantum realm. And he was again being addressed to take that quantum world, or the general scientific world, and begin to express from his position of authority and respect what was right about it and where it needed to develop. And we'll be looking at what he did do and what he didn't do and why. But yeah, there's a very specific task. For our purposes, you know, you might think, well, gosh, so what are all these dreams about? All these dreams are hitting him again and again. Do this work, do this work, do this work. That will get old. But what is interesting, all the dreams all show this issue of this transformation of a worldview from different points of view. Almost because he wouldn't cooperate, they keep coming and we keep learning all the different ways that the unconscious sees the change that needs to occur in science, and then as science informs the way we look at life, both. And that, I think, is the value of this material. And one of the images going to be hitting home again and again is that there are two dimensions. And this is the unconscious speaking, which we know tends to give us the information we need to move forward. And here it's giving us the information society needs to move forward. That's how we're going to take it.
You know, I guess what's so important about that is I know how often I'm in a conversation and I want to add something that I pull back from because I don't want to look stupid or be too out there or people think it's weird or, you know, whatever. But those, and so imagine him being in that space, very ego-driven, to be looked at as sort of like, oh my
ego-driven king of science,
right,
who is being asked to now begin to turn around and critique it.
Right. And mean, I know a little bit of tension.
Yeah.
I feel trying to live in this new world here as well. I can't even imagine.
It was not a pleasant position.
That must have been very hard.
Well, we're over time. We're basically through, well, let's see, we're through to page 20. We'll just look at page 21 very briefly. Page 21 is the old view. And science has its limits, and we're going to be saying, no, Polly's unconscious is pushing it to another horizon. Where that horizon lies, we don't know.
Could we also talk about how the author identifies spirit with intellect that are in that last...
On page 21?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he doesn't fill the reader in.
Schrodinger.
The same thing.
Schrodinger, you mean. Huh?
Well, the author of the Van
Van Oh, Van Erkelens?
This book, Van Erkelens.
Bring that up, would you, next time?
Okay.
Just so we don't forget it. Okay, thank you. See you in two.
Thank you.